Well, good afternoon, friends. We are beginning with program 25 now from Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. So it's Dinah, Volume 1, Section 1, and Part 5. We're approaching Part 6 now, and this is a video commentary. Another 3 pages of text, and we will be there. And I do want to say that today is Madame Blavatsky's birthday. How old would she be? 180? Something like that. And we owe so much to that great individual. She certainly had her own problems, but the story goes now that from Helena Rurick that she is now a master of the wisdom on the first ray as far as the soul goes. It's difficult to know what is the monad. She was so extremely intelligent. And historical, we might say. The third ray might be involved there. But it's always difficult to know what the ray of the highest monad, the liberated monad, onto the logoic plane really is. So one day we will know that. Now, and I may say, and have said, that tomorrow is the anniversary of the founding of the University of the Seven Rays, back in 1987, with the Seven Ray Institute, 2 years before that, only at a different time of year. So we understand that our esoteric education efforts in a very serious way with the university have been going for some 34 years, something like that. 87 to 2021. Yes, and the Seven Ray Institute actually for 36 years. Now, you know, I always try to give a little segue, and we finished up a section where the Tibetan had us examine ourselves very carefully and truthfully, answering questions concerning, let's see, sensitivity, yeah. Sensitivity, impersonality, the higher psychic powers, and also mental polarization. And he's summing it up by saying, these questions have a twofold purpose. They will, if you answer them truthfully and face them clearly, lead you to deal with yourself as a group member, and so ascertain, that means to come to a certain conclusion, and so ascertain the measure of your contribution to the group need and to our need of workers. And may I say that perhaps we don't have such a very good idea of what we are actually contributing to the group need. Maybe we exaggerate somehow, or maybe it's not much on our mind. And then we do know, and it is the law, that hierarchy needs outer workers, and that when you look at an ashram and those who are being drawn to the periphery of an ashram, you see a whole range of gradation. And DK has told us at various times, this is good, because it allows, therefore, the ashram to meet the needs of many types of people who are standing at different points upon the ladder of evolution. So, okay, to your contribution to the group need, maybe pause there for a moment and ask yourself, what is the group need, considering perhaps the group or groups that you have worked with? What is that group need? And not only your contribution, but the way you might constitute perhaps a liability to the group need. We have to see with clarity. And then, of course, we absolutely want to fulfill the hierarchy's need of the outer workers. Well, we must constantly attend to those thoughts. We do really want to make a contribution, and that does mean the necessity of eliminating some of the kinds of responses which DK noted when he was laying out these four groups of questions. And then he says, if you will write down and answer these questions and share the replies with your co-disciples, it will give them an opportunity to know each other better. And certainly within any successful, harmoniously functioning group, there must be a certain amount of depth of knowledge of the participants. So then this takes us on to number 25. And some higher matters are brought up here, which is interesting for the future. There is, says DK, an occult process which reaches its culmination in one of the higher initiations, with which initiation you have as yet no concern. And yet, we see that he is mentioning it. It is called a bringing forth into the light. Now, we can read about it a little bit. Something about mastership occurs to me, since it is a very lighted initiation. The sun rules it, in a sense, and it's called the initiation of revelation. Well, that revelation applies to a vision of the seven paths on the way of higher evolution, and two more which are now available but not discussed. And maybe it concerns the revelation also, which is being discussed here. A bringing forth into the light. Let me say, there's so much about our aura, the different vehicles, etc., which are hidden from others, or which is hidden from others. We don't like them to see it, and they don't like to be seen. That, of course, is an attitude which must go when we come to speak of the group taking certain initiations and moving forward together. So let's see what we can learn. DK goes on to say, an accepted disciple is one who is in process of preparation for initiation, and that is one of the tasks with which I am engaged at this time. Well, an accepted disciple can appear somewhere between the first and second initiation, perhaps closer to the second, and many accepted disciples, which Master DK has magnetized around the Lucis Trust and the Arcane School, so forth, are those who have not yet taken the second initiation, but are nevertheless accepted disciples. He might also magnetize a few who have taken that initiation and who become the real initiate of the third degree by carrying out his instructions and attending carefully to what he teaches. Okay, going on with the text. I have, therefore, to begin to lay the foundation for the esoteric unearthing or revelation of that which is hidden. So he says further, well, okay, he talks about esoteric unearthing. Actually, so much of this ununderstood material, or let's call it unfinished business, also is lying at the bottom of the aura, like so much sediment, and it has to be brought up. And that's not going to be a pleasant experience for anyone, the one from whom it is brought up and the others who surround the individual. But the group has to withstand it. I am consequently proffering to you, says the Tibetan, through these questions, the opportunity to practice early in your training this distressing revelation. And may we note that the word revelation is there, and is connected with the name of the fifth initiation. So the masters really begin practicing long before the actual requirement will appear, and he's giving us the chance here to do the same. So, repeating what he said here, I am consequently proffering to you, through these questions, the opportunity to practice early in your training. Note, please, that this is early days, or these are early days. As difficult as that training may sometimes seem to be. So anyway, the practice, to practice early in your training, this, quote, distressing revelation, which will later take place in a higher state of consciousness. It gives us the opportunity to be known. To be known, even as we seek to know another, and especially the soul of another. I just have to ask again, when we look at an individual, is the soul so covered up with glamours and illusions that we do fail to see it? Is that what's happening? Or can we actually see another as a soul? Okay. What is it, he says, that I and those who are working on the inner side are seeking to do with these groups? Reminding us, I must, that Master DK's groups are not the only groups. Experimented with by teachers on the inner side. He goes on, what is the larger objective? Okay. That we really must know, because the groups are not immediately going away. They will be offered, I think, again, on a higher turn of the spiral. And we will have the opportunity, if we are diligent enough, to participate in them. He goes on to say, the groups have not been formed to train individuals. Well, let me say right away that that kind of statement runs against what so many people think spiritual training is. The text goes on to say they have been formed, each of them, as seed groups for a definite and specific end. So he's actually using the term seed groups, which we have now used for a long time, but it's interesting to see that the idea began with the master. So, repeating, they have been formed, each of them, as seed groups for a definite and specific end. He goes on, they are organized to provide channels in the world for the distribution of certain peculiar types of force. Let me add distinctive types of force, which will work out, he says, into manifestation in specific ways. So, the purpose of the groups, which any of us participating in them really has to understand, otherwise we will just get it wrong and remain focused individually, which is a step short of what is desired. Okay, he goes on. Energy has always been manipulated by the hierarchy and distributed to the world of men. I refer to the energies, he says, used in relation to the awakening of the human consciousness, to the integration of the world of souls with the world of men. And may I add, that link, that fusion. It tells us something also about the higher aspect of the fusion formulas given in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. You wonder whether the integration is simply occurring within the energy system of the human being as a personality. But in fact, the integration formulas lead into the world of souls. We don't have to wait until we are using those advanced meditation formulas, isolated unity, inclusive reason, and presented attributes. Excuse me, I'm just trying to get some distinction here. He says, I refer to the activities whereby the human kingdom, note human kingdom, kingdom number 4, whereby the human kingdom can become a great station of light and a powerhouse of spiritual force, distributing it to other kingdoms in nature. Well, having an idea that we're not just in it for individual advancement is fundamental, it's simple, and it can be remembered in all those crisis moments when individual preference and ease of assimilation are contrasted with group welfare. So that's fundamental. Why are we there? Why have we been called together? Whether in the past or to a degree even now, and then under more specific supervision in the future. Why? And there's the goal. The human kingdom can become a powerhouse of spiritual force and can distribute, since the human kingdom is the macrocosm to the animal, vegetable, mineral kingdoms, can distribute this force to these other kingdoms, seeing after their welfare, even as now distribution occurs to us from the kingdom of souls and the kingdom of planetary lives, and well, even the kingdom of solar lives. It's difficult to know exactly what a solar life is. It's one, I think, that has a direct relation to the solar logos, particularly. And much of the work that it does is focused, for us at least in our Earth scheme, on the logoic plane. So I'm going to repeat this statement. I refer, he says, to the activities whereby the human kingdom can become a great station of light and a powerhouse of spiritual force, distributing it to the other kingdoms in nature. Well, shall we say that is our destiny. And when we're doing what we do, helping as we can help, we must remember this great goal of light ahead and power ahead and distribution ahead. Now, D.K. tells us, the statement is of vital importance. It expresses our immediate objectives and the nature of the field of service in which you, as a group and not as individuals, can function. So there's so much of the sense of being addressed by the master as a group. When he uses the word you, well, maybe everyone will assimilate it and take it in as if it were addressed to himself or herself, but the real object of address is the entire group. He does go on to say, this manipulation of energies has for centuries been carried forward by us. Note that that will mean by the members of the hierarchy. Then going on, but its effects have only been registered unconsciously by man. And let us note, this means that most human beings did not know they were being impressed by certain energies and forces which had been manipulated or rendered useful within the context of the times by the hierarchy. Okay, going on then. We have, speaking symbolically, rayed forth the light and distributed the water of life in a wide and general distribution with here and there and rarely some one isolated individual responding actively and consciously. He thus became a tiny focal point of spiritual energy and of light. Well, this is what hierarchy has done to okay. But now, something different is happening. And DK goes on to tell us about it. In the next little section here. Now, it has seemed to us possible to focus the light and knowledge much more definitely instead of in a wide and general distribution, as he says immediately above. So much more definitely, and to form groups on earth composed of the isolated responding individuals. And may I note, in the beginning of the Arcane School work and the general spiritual work, people are so frequently asking to be put in touch with others with whom they can discuss their work and service and so forth. In other words, searching for other groups. But for a while, they are left on their own to see what they can do on their own steam, as it were. So the movement to form groups on earth composed of the isolated responding individuals, because let us be truthful about it, not everybody responds, not everybody responds to notices and letters that come from headquarters inviting them into further responsible work. Composed of the isolated responding individuals, so that more light and more knowledge can be spread abroad. That is, may I note, if there are groups which together live up to these high ideals. And we will discuss how the masters brought themselves to widen the field and gather the isolated responding individuals, all with the purpose of spreading the light far and wide. So the Tibetan is saying of the inner teachers, now it has seemed to us possible to focus the light and knowledge much more definitely. Now note, please, light and knowledge. We certainly receive that from him, don't we? So, as he says, to focus the light and knowledge much more definitely, and to form groups on earth composed of the isolated responding individuals. Note, please, what a responsible task he and those others have undertaken for our upliftment. I've read to you at various times about the one who faces the light and stands within his radiance, its radiance, and then revolves upon the pedestal of light and sends light into the darkened spaces where struggling individuals are seeking that light. So what a responsibility. And as he says, so that more light and more knowledge can be spread abroad. And here is, if you noticed, a little bit of a stop there. This, it happened right here. This we decided to do in two ways. Now, What are these ways? Number one, through the collaboration of all the masters of the Great White Lodge, working through their own disciples. So let's note that it was a very broad initiative. And number two, through the specifically focused activity of the masters Moria, Kutumi, and myself, their servant and disciple. Let us notice the humility of Master DK, the modest one who always drew himself when he made certain little images in the background. He did not advance himself, except maybe later when it was useful. There is a photograph taken in Tibet in 1928. Probably you have seen it, and there he is with two of his disciples, looking very much as he described himself at one point. But there he is, and there is that triangle, Moria Kutumi and Master DK, focusing this kind of activity to reach disciples. And it's noteworthy that he names himself their servant and disciple. And indeed, think of how many people resist service. They're just too proud. Maybe we've all gone through it, you know. They're too rebellious. They're too adolescent. They're working somewhere in pedal number 3. And maybe eventually in pedal number 6, where the attempt is made to offer service. It's all part of the initiatory process. But so many people rebel against the real service, which Master DK so beautifully describes in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, Law of the Soul, Number 3, The Law of Service. Now, going on with the text, through the first method, the new group of world servers came into being. Now, all of the masters working through their disciples, many of which can be found in the new group of world servers group. So through the first method, the new group of world servers came into being, and the disciples and aspirants of the world working on all the rays, and under guidance, and under the guidance, consciously or unconsciously, of the masters who are pledged to help humanity. So this was momentous, and one of the most important things Master DK tells us is to make us aware of how important is this group, the new group of world servers, and how they are a new type of bridge between the divine plan as the masters know it and the state of humanity. Thus, the Tibetan says, thus, a vast powerhouse and station of light has been formed. And let's note that the future involves humanity becoming a great station of light. So thus, a vast powerhouse and station of light has been formed. Going on with text, it is a diffused and widespread light, and its channels are to be found all over the world, in every country and every major city. This, you know, well, let us note, it has been repeated in various ways so often. This, you know, and with this branch of the work to which I am personally pledged, and let us note that the masters themselves take pledges, make promises, make commitments. It's not just something for the pledged disciple on their of our rank, on a much higher rank. They too are, in a way, pledged disciples, well, pledged initiates, pledged members of the hierarchy. So repeating then what he says, this you know, and with this branch of the work to which I am personally pledged, and note the use of the word personally, because he's aware of himself as an individuality, to which I am personally pledged, you are actively cooperating and should cooperate. It helps, does it not, to know what we are being called upon to do and why we are being called upon to do it, so that this vast powerhouse, the human kingdom can become a great station of light and a powerhouse of spiritual force, distributing it to the other kingdoms in nature. A very worthy objective, and one that we should keep in mind. So, this was an effort which produced, diffused, and widespread light, with channels found all over the world and in every country, and in every major city. But, he goes on, but it was felt that it should also be possible to focus the light still more intensively through smaller and more carefully chosen and selected groups. Now, note, this will mean the kinds of groups that Master D.K. was gathering around himself with the 10 seed group project. He goes on, through these much smaller groups of disciples, let us note, much smaller than this great body of world servers who may not even know, many of them, that they are affiliated with the hierarchy. So repeating here, through these much smaller groups of disciples, the phenomenal appearance of certain types of energy could be expressed. Note, we will recognize those as the energies that we considered back around page 40, the different chakras involved and their different objectives and implied ray energies. So anyway, he says the phenomenal appearance of certain types of energy could be expressed. Certain powers could be unfolded, and a more specialized experiment be possible. Now, apparently, it was necessary to intensify the light, or at least it was felt, note the word, it was felt among the masters that it could be intensified. He goes on, peculiar powers could be studied and focused. Intensified light and power could be so clearly demonstrated that the sons of men would come to recognize the influence and to give proof of the supernormal, which is the heritage of future centuries. Now, let it be said that right now there are just so many who don't believe in the supernormal, or at least they may reserve a place for it in heaven where human beings cannot reach unless they die, you know, and go to heaven. For the Christians, heaven is just one place or one state, and who knows where it is. And for the occultists, the esotericists, there are a number of heavens. Every time one changes plane from the mental plane on and upward, different kinds of heavens can be inferred. But anyway, to give proof of the supernormal and to have this accepted and to for humanity to believe that it can participate in this supernormality is a very important step forward, and future centuries in the Aquarian Age have to demonstrate this. Now, interesting to see how the masters work when he says, to this particular branch of hierarchical work, I pledged myself. Now, when a master says he pledges himself, this is an inviolate promise. He's not going to break that promise. The way so many of us lesser beings do, when it becomes, unfortunately to say, inconvenient to sustain the pledge. So, to this particular branch of hierarchical work, as let us note, as must be obvious from what Master D.K. has produced, especially in these two books, the Discipleship in the New Age books, he says, I pledged myself. Going on, it would provide the nucleus for the coming types of civilization. Note, there's a plural there. Is it a typo? Is it the Aquarian civilization, or are different civilizations involving different areas on Earth and types of country meant? So he says it would provide the nucleus for the coming types of civilization and the characteristics and activities which could, note the word could, doesn't say will, which could be unfolded under the incoming new major influences. And what are those influences? They have to do with decanate energies and ray energies of the Aquarian Age, and I think one point the shifting rays of humanity, comparing the rays of humanity during the Aquarian Age with those during the Piscean Age. Some big shift to the fifth ray from the third. So these activities could be unfolded under the incoming new major influences. He goes on to say, they have always interested me. Note, the masters have their specialized interests. These have always interested me, and I have specialized in them. Note that that would mean that he's given them a particular focus of study and understanding. So, masters are, after all, human individuals and members of the human hierarchy of initiates, but they are graduates of normal human living, and they have their specialized interests. What are yours? What are mine? Because the day will come when we will be able to express those interests, having developed them in a most useful way. DK goes on, naturally, I look around among those whose lives I have been watching, sometimes for several incarnations. Let us note how well things are planned out and over such a lengthy period. It's not a happenstance, thoughtlessly spontaneous act in which the hierarchy engages. He is a watcher who knows when he looks in and how frequently, or whether he looks in at all at any one of us. But naturally, he says, I have looked around among those whose lives I have been watching, sometimes for several incarnations. Among these were those of you who are now working with me. So these people drawn in to the Arcane School, or maybe not to the Arcane School at all, but told to be contacted in whatever they were doing, out there, something else, by the Tibetan, who told Alice Bailey to write to them. Among these, he says, were those of you who are now working with me. These groups constitute the germ of a great experiment, and now the 275-year idea comes in. Because this this piece of writing from Dyna One is the very beginning of Dyna One, and so it's pretty well written in the early 30s. So about 275 years, the experiment is set to run, and maybe we can begin counting from the shift of ashrams, many of them, to the Buddhic level in 1925. Even if the result of that shift, in terms of the formation of these groups, did not occur until a few years later. So the groups, if successful, they will, in the course of the next 275 years, thus he says, number one, anchor on earth certain types of higher forces which the race needs and which are not yet active. These are ray and astrological forces. And maybe the force of certain of the creative hierarchies, but the idea behind it is the anchoring of that which is needed. We must note that Master DK is very practical here. He's not remaining with his head in the clouds, teaching us about that which cannot be applied. He's interested in the externalization of the hierarchy. And that externalization is a manifestation, is an anchoring. And so obviously, when we serve, we have to bring in the idea of the anchoring. I think all my life, well, not all my life, but at least for 50 years now, I've tried to anchor modes of esoteric education, sometimes successfully, sometimes not successfully. But the idea is make it appear, and because it appears, let it be of use then to those who might benefit from it. What else? Develop the six supernormal powers to which I have referred above. So in general, let us simply say inherent in the soul of every individual, and especially an aspirant or disciple, are these normally latent supernormal powers. We remember what they were, and that they were a little different than we might have suspected. For instance, some had to do with timing, and some had to do with sensitivity to need, and so forth. So go back and review what those supernormal powers are, because in us and in our groups, they must be unfolded, they must be developed. Number three, train. And of course, that will take time, see, to develop these six supernormal powers. He talks about during the course, or in the course of the next 275 years. It's not an overnight process. And then train the group members in that synthetic relation which characterizes the hierarchy, and so prepare them for initiation. Well, the hierarchy, of course, consists of initiates. And from the time of the third degree on, we could, in a certain measure, say that we are members of that hierarchy very peripherally, but significantly so. So we've got 275 years, and now more like 175 years remaining, in which this anchoring, this development, this training can be accomplished, or should be accomplished, if things work out successfully. Amazing, isn't it, how far ahead, considering the usual human scale of foresight and timing, how far ahead the masters think and plan. The third ray, the urge to formulate a plan, and they are great planners with foresight. They can see ahead because they've gotten their illusions. Well, you know, the principal early illusions out of the way, and they've rid themselves of glamour, as we understand glamour. Maybe there are higher glamours, but they've gotten rid of what usually stops us, and thus they can see. Now, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to really see ahead and to participate wholeheartedly in the preparation for that which lies ahead, in a way that is what we are doing. DK goes on. We're getting near number six here. Out of these groups, he says, will be picked those who can be definitely prepared for certain expansions of consciousness, and who can be trusted to contact aspects of the plan hitherto not revealed. Well, there's always an intensification of usefulness, or not. And at the heart of every group of nine, there was maybe a more trusted, more advanced, more stable triangle, each member of which formed the leading point in another one of the three triangles involved in the figure. You've seen that picture of a central triangle with a triangle at each apex. So, at the heart of things, of each symbolically represented group of nine, was a particularly trusted triangle. At least that's how I interpret it, more mature and more influential esoterically, and could help, each one of these could help in coalescing the entire group of nine. There is such a geometrical part to all this, is there not? It's like it's under the great geometrizer. I think that's one of the names of the second ray Lord. The great architect is the third ray, and the great geometrizer is the second ray. Now DK goes on to advise, as you make progress in this work, and as you seek to understand the group implications. See, let us note that that is not an immediate guarantee. There are so many people who, it seems, were in it more for themselves than for the benefit of the group of which they were a part. And we might say that such an attitude is, quote, only human. But the groups were meant to move beyond the human kingdom into the kingdom of souls. And so a differing, coalescent attitude was required. The law of cohesion, one of the synthetic laws of the solar system, would have to be employed. So repeating here what he says, as you make progress in this work, and as you seek to understand the group implications, it will become ever more clear to you what the plan really is. And I just want to say, DK cannot and does not lay out the entire plan in detail. Some of it just doesn't concern us. There is a stratum of the plan which does concern us and what we can do in our individually and in our groups within the new group of world servers. But not the fullness of it. We cannot think that we could understand the plan as the three great lords in hierarchy, Manu, Bodhisattva, Mahachohan, understand it. That would just be an impossibility. So with humility, we absorb what we can with clarity and attempt to apply. He goes on to say, it is as difficult for me to explain the underlying purpose of this group work to you as it would be to explain decimal fractions to a 7-year-old child, no matter how brilliant he might be. Well, let us note, it sounds like quite a gulf between what the master knows of the plan and what it's possible for us to comprehend. But of course, we need humility, which has been called an adjusted sense of right proportion, in order to accept such a statement. So many intelligent people, like a demanding adolescent, will say, well, tell me what it is, I'll get it, I'm smart. But there's a whole deep maturity factor that comes after many lives and initiatory experiences, which are simply missing in such a demanding individual. So great patience. Well, now he deals with patience. Great patience is needed, and he says, but if you have the needed patience, the willingness to work impersonally. Note he's dealt with that quite a bit. And proceed with love. And that's something that some of those rather evilly intended groups never had. They contacted the inverted Shambhala force, but no love, except the wrong kind for their own kind. So if you have, he says, the willingness to work him personally and proceed with love, if you will submerge your personalities in the group life, you will know, you will perceive, and the light will break in. That is a very encouraging statement, because we may wonder, when will we understand? Well, it comes back to the statement of the Christ, those who do the will of God shall know. D.K. goes on, the power to work will come to you. We shall then have power to work. Well, okay. We can think that we know and can therefore work. But as Master Moria has said, to the one approaching the furnace, he may know a lot about it, but that will not save him from the flames, from the heat. He has to do more than just know. So the power to work will come to you. We, assuming members of the hierarchy, we shall then have radiant focal points of light or light bearers and channels for the planned distribution of force, a thing which has never yet been upon the scale which we now contemplate. So hierarchy is looking far ahead and wants us to get ourselves into shape so we can help to fulfill their objectives, which are coming straight from the three great lords and from the Nirmanakayas and from Sanat Kumara and from the planetary logos and from the solar logos. There's a whole chain of command there. I mean, do we not want to make ourselves somehow fit? Do we not want to make ourselves fit really to serve them and to serve the divine purpose as expressed through the divine plan of what can be accomplished at this point in the history of humanity? Well, there we are, friends. A few thoughts. We've just done maybe, well, 2.5 or 3 pages. Let's see, I hope that you've been seeing this. Yes, it looks like you have. I'm always a little worried that in my enthusiasm, I miss pressing the right button And I'm talking about then what you don't see. So this has been program number 25. And the day has been the 12th. Oops. The 12th of August. Again, Madame Blavatsky's birthday. And we have worked from page 52 to 55. Our next program will be program 26. And instead of part 5, we will be beginning part 6. And we'll just see when I can do that. Always hoping for the best, but I do have a reappearance of the Christ meditation coming up, and you know, it's just a question of how much steam you have after all that. You know, as you get older, maybe the steam pressure the steam pressure is less, and you use what you have to do what seems indicated. And sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. So, well, friends, what can I say? Here I am after 50 years of work in this, in these books, ever since 1971, assiduously working in these books, maybe not always as intelligently as possible, but at least working. And the gift which has been given is extraordinary. It has what we need to become true disciples, true members of the new group of world servers, and true initiates who have put many non-essential things, many preoccupations behind us as we continue to advance, not just for our own sake, which will be inevitable, of course, the improvement will come, but for the sake of the groups, the nations, and finally all of humanity. That's the reason we work. If we are large enough in our soul to comprehend that reason. Yeah. So part 6, it starts at 55 and goes for 8 pages until part 7, somewhere here. Yep, there it is. Okay. Part 6 coming up. Okay, friends, from Tui and myself and Mikhail and BL and Joe and Michael, the more regular members of the communications team, and from a number of others who help us along the way. We wish you love and many blessings and as deep and useful an absorption of this material as may be possible to you. So this will be up before long on Makara and also on our YouTube, Moria Federation Esoteric Education channel. And hopefully we will learn what true soul consciousness is and be able, as a result of successful meditation, to meditate contemplatively within that, for us, very subtle state, the soul. Okay. See you soon.